Mr. President, thank you for such a kind introduction. Good morning, you can tell it's been a long day. Good evening, everyone. My name is Sina Brahm, and coming to you from Cary, North Carolina, on a thunderstorm late in evening. I wanted to take a little bit and just tell you a little bit about what I do, talk about inclusive design, and get right into it. And so I run a company called Prime Access Consulting, or PAC for short. And it's a really cool job. I'm incredibly privileged. I this week alone, one conversation was around how do we make holograms accessible. The other one was we have an immersion room and we've got only projectors and we don't have electricity on the walls, but how do we make everything accessible and inclusively designed for everybody, you know, regardless of abilities, whether you can see or hear or use your feet to walk around. And these are just, you know, some of the conversations I get to have and some of the amazing spaces I get to play in. And the reason that I get to play in those spaces is because of this philosophy of inclusive design. And so, you know, we all talk about accessibility, right? You know, those things that are done, especially for persons with disabilities, sometimes it's defined as those things that are done for those who depend on assistive technologies. But really what it comes down to is that there's a difference between that and inclusive design, right? Inclusive design is a methodology, it's a way of thinking that allows us to design experiences, places, buildings, services, products, what have you, in such a way that it is usable by the widest possible audience, in such a way that it doesn't introduce barriers and upfront, right? Not making it accessible after the fact. You know, the common example of this stuff is things like the curb cut, right? It's a critical for some audiences, like those with mobility differences, but it's augmentative and it's helpful for everybody, right? Such as, for example, parents with strollers or people with luggage at the airport. And we don't think of certain other things as inclusive design, but they are. Think of things like audio description that is not only helpful for those of us who are blind and use it on services like Netflix and so forth, but also my friend who's autistic uses it. I was over at his house. We have a pretty irreverent relationship. I'm like, you know, you can see, right? And he's like, yeah, I do, you know, but I use it for the emotional contents. I want to know what in certain dramas, it's hard for me to detect emotional contents sometimes. So I turn on the audio description. And we see this all the time with other stuff, visual description in art galleries. It's useful for those who can see, not just for those who can't, because it lets you know what's going on, right? And it lets you have a guided looking experience. And so, you know, if you really want to think about this difference, one way of looking at it is something like, for example, at the National Museum of African American History and Culture, there's the Greensboro Counter, right? It's a counter, it's an exhibition on segregation, right? It is detailing the violence that was portrayed against these men of color that sat at the counter, right, during the civil rights movement in this country. And if you go there, if you're a wheelchair user, you're asked to roll down to the end of the counter where it's been lowered a couple of inches, right? Now, this is accessible, right? But we think in the work that we do at PAC, like, so if you're a Black woman in a wheelchair rolling up to this thing, you're asked to roll down to the end of the counter. It's accessible, it's legal, but it is no way inclusive. And that's the work that we try to do. That's the kind of situation that we try to avoid in the world, right? So we need to remember that, you know, a lot of us know these facts, these numbers, we hear them all the time, right? 25% of the people in the world have a disability. Your chances of experiencing a disability over the age of 35 is 1 out of 2, right? All these kinds of things. And it really speaks to a tapestry of humanity. It speaks to the fact that we all have different abilities and different skills and different ways of interacting with the world. And we need to get out of these silos. A lot of the work that we do concentrates on understanding that we need to be able to build coalitions amongst groups of persons with disabilities, whether it's deaf folks and blind folks and autistic folks and so forth, because only together can we overcome some of the incredibly significant challenges that are facing us, not only today, but in the near future. right? We need to understand that this doesn't take away from our individual causes, right? Making the world more inclusive is not antithetical to the mission of the NFB. Making it more inclusive is not antithetical to our friends in the deaf community. But we need to understand that we have these amazing talents and expertise that we can bring to these conversations. And only together, through realizing that when something is inaccessible or othering for one group of people, it's inaccessible and othering for all of us. Right. So that's the underlying ethos behind the work that I do and what I tend to believe in. Now, why does this matter? It matters because we live in the most accessible time in the world. And you know what else is simultaneously true? We live in the most inaccessible time in the world. We have become pretty complacent, I feel, as persons with disabilities when it comes to the way we think about especially technology, right? A lot of us are enamored with our various touchscreen-based devices and, you know, iPhones and iPads and so forth that have built-in accessibility, and those are wonderful things. They should be celebrated. But the thing is that over the next 4 years, there will be more inaccessible experiences created than in the history of humanity. That's the nature of exponential progress. That is what we're up against. And so if we don't do something about that, and if we don't do something about that together, then we are absolutely out of luck. So we can't be talking about accessibility. If we're having a conversation around accessibility, it's already too late. That's a post facto conversation. We need to be talking about inclusion and inclusive design upfront. Take, for example, some current events. The ACLU right now has a major campaign, and these are not bad people, by the way, right? They have a major campaign right now against facial recognition and really stigmatizing facial recognition as a technology. And for good reason, facial recognition has been used to perpetuate massive harm and violence, especially against marginalized groups of people, such as persons of color in this country. But here's the thing, right? A lot of us use facial recognition all the time, not only to just do something like unlock our phones, but to understand who's in a photo because Apple has built in artificial intelligence into our devices. Someone who's autistic can use facial recognition technology to detect emotional contents, either on a video stream or through image recognition, right? These things really matter, but these policies that are being put forth, they're being put forth by well-meaning people. They're being put forth by folks who want to do good and prevent harm in the world. However, they're deeply ableist, right? They're deeply naive solutions to complicated problems. So we need to work together and have a unified voice, especially amongst all persons of varying abilities. Otherwise, we have absolutely no chance, my friends, of solving these problems and making sure our voices and our roles in the world are represented in the way that we want them to be. So what can we do about it, right? I mean, this is a little bit of doom and gloom. What can we do about it? Well, we can think inclusively, right? When we have an experience, we don't only need to be thinking about ourselves in terms of, oh, was that described? Or, you know, was this available in Braille? But was there sign language, right? What would I have done if I didn't have the privilege of being able to walk there? Was there a ramp to get access to that thing, right? We need to be thinking about all of our brothers and sisters and fellow humans that have various abilities, because we need to then be surfacing these issues and problems when we notice them in the world so that we can be helping each other and by doing so, of course, help ourselves, right? We need to also be able to bring on board allies. And this means, for example, the individuals that are creating experiences. I work with thousands of designers and developers every single year. My and my team work across hundreds of different products in the industry, whether it's healthcare or museums in which we do a ton of work. And a lot of these people are simply acting from a place of, first of all, lack of education about accessibility and inclusive design. And second of all, from a place of not knowing what it is to do, right? They're told one thing and expected to quickly become an expert in certain matters, but they're not set up to win. And we need to be able to group together with other persons with disabilities, with other groups, to establish education pipelines, to establish unified messaging, and to really go after legislators on this topic so that we are unified in our approach, because there is an avalanche of new technologies headed our way. It will blow your mind what is going to happen between now and 2030. It is not a mathematical exaggeration. It's literally to say that it will be more than all of humanity has experienced since there have been people on this planet. And so if we realize that that is true, we cannot be complacent and satisfied, right? Now, being unsatisfied does not mean being ungrateful, right? I have the privilege of working with some incredible people every single day. People who go, I had no idea. You know, some people are like, I didn't even know computers could talk, right? That's where some people start. Other people are like, oh, I think I know everything about accessibility. And, you know, maybe after a couple of conversations with my team, they realize they don't. We all have different journeys we're walking on, right? But we cannot be complacent in that. We need to be grateful, but pushing forward with incredible fervent behavior. Because if we don't, then we're going to be left behind at a rapidly accelerating rate. So I invite you, you know, in these last couple of minutes, think about your personal experiences. Think about going through the world in whatever capacity you do, whether it is education, whether it is in the practice of law, whether it is in technology or in music or in anything that it is that you do. And think about those experiences not only from the viewpoint and through the lens of blindness, which we, and in this group of people under this virtual room, do such a good job at, but also under the lens of making sure that these experiences and these environments that we have the privilege of existing in are as inclusive as we possibly can make them for our fellow humans. Now, this has some practical consequences. It means that when we notice something like there's no captions on a video, we need to be complaining about that just as hard as no audio description. It means that when we notice that there's no, for example, sign language interpretation at a dramatic event, that's just as important as not having audio description, right? Things like this are a way that we can start building consensus that there is a unified need. It's not an option, right? That we need to make our environments less disabling, right? It's that old adage, right? That you have the medical model of disability and you have the social or environmental model of disability, right? It's not the individual that's disabled. It is the environment that is disabling. And we need to work together to make sure that our environments are not disabling as we move forward throughout the world. In closing, I just want to say thank you so much to all of you for, you know, for your time. Thank you, Mr. President, for your invitation to speak to the convention this evening. And I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of your convention. Have a good night, everybody.